Hello, and welcome to Intrepid Heroes Presents, a podcast where we chat about various topics related to role-playing games, typically Paizo products such as Pathfinder and Starfinder, but also others. I'm John Godek, and with me today is Natalie Kirchner. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, John. Great to be with you today.
Yeah, so Natalie was the first person to complete the requirements as a 5 Nova GM earlier this year, is a freelance author for Paizo. She recently started working as a third-party developer and even started a convention this year in Boston. Talk about being a busy person. Natalie, can you tell me a little bit about the process for earning your fifth Nova?
Sure. So for 5 Novas, it's very similar to the Pathfinder Society requirements for 5 stars. You need to have GM'd 150 Starfinder games, so this could be a combination of Starfinder Society scenarios or sanctioned Adventure Path content. It needs to be, I believe, at least 50 unique scenarios. I actually haven't looked at their requirements.
Right. I believe that is correct, yes.
And have 3 review games with either Venture Captains or Venture Lieutenants, just to make sure that you're not phoning it in.
Right. And then I also seem to recall there's the last requirement, which is the one that kind of kept you from earning it the longest.
Oh. Yes, the specials. Yes, how could I have forgotten about that? Yes, you need to have GM'd at least 10 Starfinder Society interactive specials. And as of right now, there are only 2.
That
was the one that was holding me up for a while.
That kind of means you have to do a little bit of traveling, because that typically is only done at conventions, you know, large and small, and so it's a little bit tougher to get that, which is what I think is held back you, also Gary Norton, who, as far as I know, you two are the only two that have completed all these requirements, though there are a couple other people that are close.
Yes. Yeah, you know, it's really interesting that a lot of people that would normally have, met their requirements and are incredibly dedicated and deserve recognition for their commitment to Starfinder Society or Pathfinder Society or any other type of organized play are really held back by that special requirement. And it's not so much the special requirement, but it's the restriction on the specials. As you mentioned, like, they're really only at conventions. So I can think of maybe 2 or 3 conventions per year that are within a 4 or 5 hour drive of Boston, that run any of the Starfinder specials. And so that's a huge commitment in terms of time, driving, paying for a hotel, all of that. It does put a pretty big restriction on it.
Yeah,
let me clarify. I am incredibly privileged that I was able to travel to conventions to get this done so fast, and I absolutely recognize that and am trying to work to make that barrier point lower.
Well, it is possible. They also do specials online and play by post, so it's, you don't have to travel for all of them, but it seems like in order to get it in the relatively short amount of time that you did, some traveling would be required. Otherwise, it's more like you get a couple a year here, and so it would take a longer time.
Oh, absolutely. And I want people to be successful in whatever medium they feel most comfortable in. Mm-hmm. So I know a lot of GMs love play-by-post, and that's all they do. And I want them to be able to, you know, be successful as a 5-star or 5-nova through that method. Or through VTT. I personally really don't like doing VTT with or play by post with people I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the only reason I'm really okay with jamming for people I don't know is that it's in person, and you know, I can see their faces, read their body language, and they can read mine.
Mm-hmm. What were some of the other challenges you had in terms of not just the numbers, but the kind of the process itself? Was there anything else that you found a little difficult?
For a really long time, and I think it's pretty much still the case that unless you're doing APs, unless you're running APs, there isn't enough sanctioned content at the moment. There aren't enough Starfinder society scenarios. So finding a good group of people to run an AP for, and then finding the time commitment to do that is another big barrier, time commitment.
Right. Yeah, for sure. I know talking to Gary earlier in the podcast, he literally travels three times a week to different locations in L.A. to get his games in. But he also enjoys jamming a lot. That's kind of why he does it, not necessarily for the numbers. And he shot way past the required 150 by the time he completed. So
exactly.
So you've also done some writing for Paizo. Can you tell us a little bit about what you've done and kind of how you got started doing that?
Sure. So I've done a few things, kind of tapering off by deliberately on my part. I was one of the four co-authors on Starfinder Society 116, Dreaming of the Future, which was one of the first quest packs that came out. I was also the sole author on Starfinder SFS 123, Return to Sender, which was a 5-8 scenario that was part of the continuing Jinsoul storyline for Season 1. And I am co-authoring a unannounced SFS upcoming scenario.
Oh, excellent. Wow. Will that be announced soon?
I hope so. Okay. I also did some work in Alien Archive 3. And you know, with that, and we're right after that, was offered some work doing some PF2 for one of their hardcovers, and additional back matter work for an upcoming Starfinder AP. And this is part of the reason I'm kind of tapering off, is I find it very easy, and the writing comes very easy when I'm really engaged in a story, in a narrative. When I know what's happening, I know who the players are, and I know who the characters are. I could write for days with that kind of framework, but I find it very difficult to stare at a page and with the directions of, hey, come up with two new feats for, you know, this god or this religion, or, hey, you know, here's a creature we want you to create. Write up a stat block for it with a description. When stuff is really out of context, I have a hard time with that, writing from scratch.
So, I can see that situation. So you much rather have some existing content and build upon it rather than have a clean slate, it sounds like.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, that is one of the reasons my partnership with my good friend John Curtin and I works so well. So we started our third-party publisher, Barely Factual Productions. And one of the reasons we work so well together is he is so good at the things I am so bad at, and kind of vice versa. So he is so good at taking an idea, a one-off joke that one of us says, and creating it and bringing it to life. And, you know, doing that high-level outline. And once I see the words on there, I'm really good at helping him shape it into what his vision is and even expanding upon that.
Yeah, sounds like a lot of editorial type of work then, rather than even straight authorship then.
Yeah, it's definitely editing. It's definitely developing. But this is one of the reasons why on our material, we've been publishing it under Starfinder Facts, mm-hmm. because it's really both of us. There isn't a primary author or a primary editor or a primary developer. It's really both of us working together to produce the content.
Yeah, can you tell us a little bit more about Barely Factual, kind of what your focus is there and kind of why you decided to start doing that?
Sure. So Barely Factual Productions is a kind of spin-off of Starfinder Facts. So for those of you who don't know, Starfinder Facts was started by John as kind of a parody Starfinder account with, you know, fun fake facts about things in the Starfinder universe, mm-hmm. Which we love so much. And John is a great writer. He's very funny. Because he lives so close to me, he lives about 45 minutes away, we game together a lot. And over the course of this gaming, we kind of started realizing that, hey, we can collaborate together on some of this stuff. He had known about some of my published writing with Paizo and asked me to edit and look over some stuff that he was writing for the blog. And after that went so well and we got such good feedback from the audience about the content that we had worked on together, we decided that we should do more of it. That's how that kind of gets started. And in my day job, my real job, I'm a project manager. Mm-hmm. So I bring a lot of that structured framework to development. As in, like, we, you know, a tracking sheet with, hey, these are all the ideas that we have. This is what stage they're in. Who's going to be the primary author on this? Who's going to be developing? Who's going to be editing? And what are our release dates for this upcoming content? And are we on track to get that done? So I bring a lot of that project experience into it.
And how can people find this this content?
It's still being developed. We have about like 10 things that are 75% done.
Okay.
We want to release a bunch at once.
Okay.
So people can, if they like it, they immediately have something else that they can pick up.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very hard when both of us are working 50-hour a week day jobs on top of this and kind of writing in our spare time.
And what type of content will this be for folks? Will it be new creatures? Will it be settings?
So a little bit of a mix of both. You know, one thing that when we were talking about setting up Barely Factual, we were looking at the existing landscape of third-party publishers for Starfinder. And there's obviously a lot, and obviously many that are very successful. But a lot of them focus on mechanics. Here is a cool theme. Here is an archetype. Here are some feats. Here are items. Here are creatures you can encounter.
Mm-hmm.
And I want more. We wanted more story. Mm-hmm. We are very narrative. So we love the Starfinder universe, and we want to be able to engage in it more in different ways. So the content you're going to be seeing from us are stories. So it's either we have some one-hour quests in a quest pack that are in development, some standalone scenarios, and a couple of modules. And baked into those will be new creatures, new items, but that's not the primary point.
Mm-hmm,
the
mm-hmm.
primary point is the story.
And what kind of flavor are you looking for in these stories? Is there something particularly irreverent? Or, I mean, you talk about Barely Factual, kind of how you started working on it. It makes me think that it's going to be a lot different than the normal that we see from Paizo.
I feel like, yes, it's going to be a little bit lighter.
Okay.
What's really important to me is flexibility. So, for instance, in SFS 123, I don't know if you've played it before.
Yes.
Yes. So there's this creature in there, this little sharktopus.
Yes, I was going to ask you, did you create that or was it already there?
No, that was me. But I think
it's so awesome.
It's a really good example because if a GM, and there's a call-out box in the scenario that is mm-hmm. like, hey, GMs, read your table. You know, this is a flex point for you. If your table is laughing and enjoys this, like, play this up. This could be the funny part of the scenario for you that you guys riff on for the rest of the night.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if your table isn't into it, if they're more serious, if they're playing, you know, serious operatives that want to go in and kill the gin souls, you know, have this creature just run off. It's not a big deal. So I think it's really important to have those opportunities in there to mm-hmm. have, to make it silly. You know, everybody's going to be able to have fun in their own way. But what I think is going to be different from ours is that there are going to be more options for laughter.
Well, and especially that one, the fact that it kind of gloms onto Razadom afterwards, I think really, really sets the tone, kind of interesting on that. I've run it several times, and I was very disappointed one of the times I ran it that the players did not go into that area because of the warning signs outside, and I was so bummed having to cross off the shark octopus off their chronicle sheets because they didn't get it. So,
I know, and then it died because the thing blew up.
Right.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that I know. No, that's cool. So if that's the kind of stuff that you're doing with your developer, I think that's going to be a lot of fun. Definitely look forward to that.
Yeah, it's really about flexibility. I don't want to force people into a situation where they have to go through the motions of, you know, doing a silly thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I want it to be there if they want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, when, especially if you're gaming with a close group of friends that you like.
Right.
For me anyway, I almost find the enjoyment of being around my friends the highlight of the night, and the story is secondary.
I 100% agree. I game. I have Sundays where I'm running society play, and then on Wednesdays I run APs for friends, and it's just night and day. You know, I might have a couple people that I know in the groups I'm running, but it's always like really close friends when I'm running the APs. And it's just so much more fun. It doesn't even matter what we're doing or how far we get. It's just so much more fun. That's one of the things I love about the game. Yeah,
exactly. So I think it's going to be more designed for that kind of crowd where you mm-hmm. want to sit around, play, have fun. John Curtin will of course make sure that there's serious elements where it's with serious stat blocks in there. But I think overall the flavor will have more of that fun stuff in it.
So is it just the two of you, or do you have other folks freelancing for you?
It's from a business standpoint, it is just the two of us. We are actively working with additional close friends in the area,
mm-hmm.
That have really great ideas. But not a lot of writing experience, mm-hmm. and doing some coaching on how to start writing things,
mm-hmm.
or mm-hmm. even how to start thinking about how to put things down on paper. As of right now, this is a labor of love. You know, we obviously haven't made any money off of it, and we don't have a product to sell yet, so we're not in a position right now to be paying people unless it's out of our own pockets.
And we
want this to be a self-sustaining enterprise.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Very cool. So also this year, you started a convention. What was the impetus behind that?
Sure. So I started a nonprofit organization, Bean City Gaming.
Mm-hmm.
And our flagship event was BeanCon. So it's named Bean for a couple things. One, I live in Boston, and Boston's nickname is, of course, Beantown.
Mm-hmm.
But I also have a very adorable cat who's sitting on my lap right now, whose name is Bean.
Okay.
Whose silly antics is the highlight of many of our gaming nights. So it seemed that he would be a good name for the convention. Yeah, so... The lead up to BeanCon and Bean, the creation of Bean City Gaming, was really building up over probably a year or so. So it really started last, maybe January, because of a large convention that is held in the Boston area in February called TotalCon. So this year we were very excited because both Jason Keeley and John Compton were on the list for Paizo to send to TotalCon. This is the largest organized play convention in the New England area. You know, we regularly had 10 or more tables running per session.
Yeah, that's a lot.
So it was really big, and we were really excited to have two Paizo staffers sent. And then TotalCon put on their webpage that Bill Webb of Frog God Games was coming, and that Frog God Games had donated a bunch of swag to the convention. And after that, Paizo withdrew sending its staffers.
Right.
And I, you know, I had very conflicting feelings about supporting TotalCon from an organized play perspective. I was still the venture lieutenant for the Boston area at the time. And I, you know, my players were going to go there no matter what. I wasn't going to convince all of them to boycott.
Can you explain a little bit to our listeners what the issue is with the boycott?
So you mean the issues with Frog God?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a very long thing that people can find out with a Google search, but Bill Webb, you know, assaulted someone at PaizoCon, has been banned from PaizoCon for life, has had a long history of being too friendly with people when he drinks, which is a lot at conventions. And so he was kind of well known among the quote whisper networks of women at conventions of, hey, don't be around this guy at conventions. So, and yeah, we could spend a very long time talking about that.
Yeah, we don't need to get more into that. I just wanted to mention the reason why Paizo decided to boycott is all. That's what I wanted to get at. So,
I think they would take issue with saying Paizo is boycotting it, but
they withdrew a couple of guests.
They yes, they withdrew guests. So, you know, on one hand, I didn't want to personally support a convention that seemed okay with having this person that is known to act inappropriately at conventions around. But at the same time, my players were going to be there, and I wanted to do what I could to protect them. And I felt like the only way I could do that was by going.
Right.
So I very much resented being put in that situation. And then I had a couple other bad experiences at conventions this summer. At PaizoCon, for instance, during the running of the Pathfinder special for the end of Pathfinder First Edition, there were 49 male GMs for the special and me. So one woman. And you know, when I brought up that gender disparity to the leaders of organized play and Paizo, they kind of shrugged and said, well, we really can't do anything. It's a local problem, not our issue. And I found that answer to be very unsatisfactory. And, you know, so that was in May, and then in early June, I attended Origins, which I love because it's the start of the new Starfinder season. But at Origins, I found out that one of the local venture officers, I say local to Boston, not local to Origins, had knowingly put female players in harm's way. So knowingly put them near a situation with a known abuser, so leaving them to be victimized.
Wow.
And there was no repercussions for the abuser or the center officer that let them in that situation. And at Gen Con, you know, kind of still feeling this buildup from PaizoCon and Origins, where I felt, you know, women really weren't being represented, people of color weren't being represented. I was really looking for ways that organized play and Paizo could be more inviting towards female GMs. And, you know, what one of the ways they can do that is by offering women's shirts to GMs.
Right, right. I saw quite a bit of posting on that beforehand. Yeah.
Yeah, so right now they only offer men's shirts, which fit a little bit differently on when a woman wears them. You know, for instance, you know, I wear on the men's shirts that I have, you know, it fits me over the shoulders, but then doesn't really fit at the hips and kind of bunches up a little bit. And it's a little uncomfortable, but if I go up to the next men's size, then the shoulders are really big and the sleeves get in the way. So these are problems that I wouldn't have with a shirt that was cut for a woman.
Right.
And I received a lot of pushback from that, from the organizers of Gen Con and from organized play. And at that point, I was kind of just, I'd had enough. Like, I wanted a convention where making sure people feel included was the number one goal. Like, it's not about having the biggest convention. It's not about getting the most number of players. It's about quality. So I started Bean City Gaming and Bean Con with the express purpose of highlighting women, LGBTQ, people of color as game masters, as dungeon masters, as game creators, as authors, as artists, and really offering them and saying, hey, you don't need to worry about, is this place going to be inclusive of someone like me? Yes, it is. And not only that, but the men here that we have are going to be really supportive of you as well. They believe in the word ally as a verb and not a noun. And kind of with that mentality, starting a local convention.
And how big of a response did you get for that? I'm kind of curious.
We sold out of our original run of tickets in about 5 days.
Wow.
And then we doubled the venue size, and we sold out of that in 10 more days.
Wow.
Really, really great response from the community. It helped that the convention doubled as a fundraiser.
Right.
So, you know, Bean City Gaming is incorporated as a nonprofit, and we're actively applying for our 501c3 status. So the funds we collected from the charity auction that we had, as well as donations, went to Bean City Gaming to pay for three things. One, to help pay for the cost of putting the convention on. Two, we made a $1,000 donation to Jane Doe Inc., which is a local coalition of nonprofits that is dedicated to enabling women and others to leave domestic violence situations. So it's really important to us here. And then the third part, which is unannounced yet, but I've been casually talking about it, is that in 2020, we would like to do some creator grants. So we've spent a lot of time at different conventions talking with diverse creators and really identifying, hey, where could, you know, $100, $300, $500 helped you out the most on your way here? And, you know, for an example, one of the game designers we had at BeanCon told me that her one thing that would really help her out would be paying for a professional editor for her game and all of the content. Because if people see an editing mistake in your game content, it lowers their opinion of the game. Mm-hmm. So helping professionalize it either with editing or with graphics would have really elevated her product and help her to kind of break through to the next level. Mm-hmm. So stuff like that. Even if so, another graphic artist, you know, she didn't want. I'm sorry, they didn't want, you know, fancy pencils or anything like that. But they really could have benefited from an online course in how to use this premium product that they're using. And they told us, you know, I'm using this tool, but I really feel like I'm not getting the most out of it because I don't really know how. And Googling how to do things only takes you so far. What I could really use is a class. So paying for a design class, or not even just offering a stipend to help pay for it. That's the kind of stuff we're going to be interested in awarding grants for, and we're going to be announcing details on the application process soon.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. I kind of like the overall, you know, mission and approach you have, because you're both modeling the behavior, but you're also trying to help expand what it's like too, you know, to enable folks to be successful. So that's
It's really enablement. It's giving. We are not trying to make people successful per se. We are trying to give them the tools,
right?
And the platform when need be to be successful. Mm-hmm. But we really want to, you know, like I was saying before, we want ally to be a verb and not a noun. Mm-hmm. You know, we are allies, but allyship is what we do.
No, that's cool. This is actually something I actually had no idea, the background behind it. This is, I think, been really, really informative. And I hope that maybe sometime I can get out there. Unfortunately, it's on the other coast, so it's a little bit more challenging for me to do that. Well, Natalie, I do have one more question for you, actually two more, but the first one is, what advice do you have for people interested in either getting into organizing like you've been doing, either organized play or convention organizing, getting into writing, freelance writing, or maybe even getting into publishing? Do you have some bits of wisdom from your experience?
Sure. So for convention organizing, it's really important to have, if you are not a strong project manager like I am, since it's my day job,
right,
it's really important to have someone working with you that can keep track of those tasks, keep track of the money, make sure that you're doing everything legally, you know, so you don't need to pay taxes on all of the money that you raised. You know, if we hadn't incorporated our nonprofit and opened up a separate bank account to have that nonprofit money in, you know, the IRS would consider all of that money I deposited as revenue.
Right.
I mean, as money to be taxed. Mm-hmm. So that's really, it's really important. And then it's really important to identify the niche that you want to reside in. You know, what are your differentiators? What are the customers? I'm thinking in my day job language and jargon. But you know, what are their hot buttons? What's important to them? You know, what do the people you want to attract to your convention? What do they think is missing? And how can you offer that to them? How can you offer them an environment that meets that missing need? And how can you align that with the needs of the community you want to serve? So I think that's really important. As for writing, a lot of it is networking and who you know. So going to conventions, if you can afford it, going to conventions is a great way to do it. I understand that that's not on the table for everyone. but just talking to people, because a lot of these, you know, the especially big places like Paizo or even some of the larger third-party publishers, you know, they get so many unsolicited emails with content. Hey, I want to be a writer. I want to be a writer. You know, I write this stuff for my home game. It's like, oh, okay, well, writing stuff for your home game is great, but, you know, can you translate it into box text? Like, do you know how to do treasure? Mm-hmm. Can you deliver on a timeline? Can you follow instructions? Mm-hmm. You know, people, so, you know, sometimes have a hard time. It's like, well, I want to write a scenario about this. It's like, well, no, sorry. This is what we have. We've already mapped out this entire season. Mm-hmm. This is what we're doing. So getting an introduction, I think, is really important. So I believe Kate Baker, who I believe you interviewed recently.
Yep.
Back when I was thinking about doing more writing than I decided to do, made some introductions with some of the larger third-party publishers, and that came with offers of work. You know, if someone is vouching for you and your capability and can make those introductions in any line of work, not just writing, mm-hmm. that's going to give you a huge advantage over the unknown person next door. Writing for Wayfinder is always a great idea, because that's published material that you can do. Really, any exposure you can have, I think, is going to be good, even if it's just namelessly editing or developing other people's work, just to get a sense of other people's writing styles and things that they do mm-hmm. well, and things that you think you could do better. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what's next for Natalie? Kind of what's the future hold for you?
Well, I'm very much committed to this work that I'm doing with Barely Factual, with my friend and business owner, John Curtin. I'm very happy to be writing Starfinder Society scenarios for Thirsty. I think Thurston Hillman, the Starfinder mm-hmm. lead, organized play lead. I feel like right now that is what I'm comfortable with in terms of my relationship with Paizo. I feel comfortable writing for Thirsty as a person. I'm not sure how comfortable I feel expanding beyond that. In addition, I'm still up in the air about the conventions I'm going to attend this year. Mm-hmm. So Paizo recently sent out an email asking for early GM signups for PaizoCon.
Right. Right.
And I sent back a response, you know, asking what are they going to do to kind of start addressing. I don't even need a plan, but a plan to have a plan. Mm-hmm. to start addressing some of these discrepancies. So gender discrepancy or gender disparities, a plan in place for how to treat problematic members of the community that are in positions of authority. And I haven't heard back yet. I know Tanya's been at PAX Unplugged, and that's probably why. But until I start seeing real soul searching from organized play and what they want their organization to look like in 5-10 years from now, mm-hmm. I'm not sure I can support it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just over at Paizo yesterday, actually, and one of the things they mentioned there is how they are working to try to be more inclusive in their contributors and, you know, their authors and things like that. I did not talk to them about their conventions. Because that's like you said, you know, me being a person of color, I definitely notice a lot of people not like me in the room when I go to these big convention halls. So,
and, yes.
You know, where normally I don't notice that all the time in Seattle because it's a pretty diverse area. But all of a sudden I go into a convention in the city and it's like all of a sudden I'm like transported someplace else. So definitely notice that.
I know, and yes, the individual people within Paizo have been doing a remarkably great effort to include a diverse array of authors and voices in their work. Mm-hmm. I 100% agree with that. I think that organized play side is a little different mm-hmm. in that they have, it's decentralized, right? So you ostensibly have a free acting organized play foundation that has conflicts of interest, right? Because the Organized Play Foundation is getting paid by Paizo, and Paizo is a business that wants to make money. Mm-hmm. So the business decision there is, you know, do we want 10 maybe not high quality players that might have problems but are all paying good money for things? Or do we want 6 great ones that we really like and could actively recruit more players? Hmm. And I think right now the short-term business decision is the more players, the more money we have coming in, the better, because organized play is Paizo, even though it's classified as this nonprofit entity.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So,
well, Natalie, you want to continue on? Or
No. It's okay.
No, I was going to say, I was going to wrap it up because this is a little bit longer than I promised we'd go. So, Natalie, okay. Thank you so much for being on the podcast today. I really do appreciate your insights here. I hope to see you at a convention. I don't know how much I'll be traveling myself this year. I made a lot of rounds last year where I saw you quite a bit, but this year, because of a variety of reasons, I'm not sure if I will be out as much. Though I do intend to go to PaizoCon here, so I will be here locally. Thanks again. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, John. Bye.